Hey there, it's Dina. Last week, the world said goodbye to an adorably clumsy humanoid robot named Atlas.
You broke my heart, 'cause I couldn't dance. You didn't even...
But the company that created the robot, Boston Dynamics, told fans that Atlas wasn't really gone.
And now I'm back to let you know I can really shake him down.
He just got a massive upgrade. With articulated joints, which presumably will help with the dorky dance moves.
About 10 years ago, we built a robot we called BakeBot. And this robot was able to make cookies.
This is Daniela Roos. She's a professor at MIT.
In fact, it really read a recipe written in natural language. It mapped that recipe into robot commands. It looked for ingredients. It mixed them in the right order, and then it found the oven and it baked the cookie. The cookies were not very elegant, but they were tasty.
She says today's robotics are much more practical. They offer things like surgeries without incisions.
By using essentially mini robotic pills.
And clothing that can make you stronger or faster.
So that effectively your vest or your jacket or your pants could double up as a robot.
And what she sees ahead for robotics isn't some dystopian reality, but rather some very exciting things. So today on Click Here, we're going to inspire you with some possibilities, with a conversation between Daniela Roos, an MIT robotics researcher and professor, and Kara Miller, the host of MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Labs Alliances podcast. And the robotic future they see is pretty spectacular. Take a listen.
When Daniela Roos was growing up, she only ever saw two American television programs.
Now, this was the 1970s Romania, and it was a period marked by the communist regime under Nicolae Ceausescu. And so access to Western television shows was extremely limited and tightly controlled by state, because the regime promoted content that aligned with socialist ideas. And often restricted Western media because it was perceived as capitalist propaganda.
Now, the programs that the regime did allow were kind of a strange mix. One of them was Dallas, which told the story of an oil-rich clan in Texas that featured a lot of family disagreements.
I believe that at the time, the officials believed that the show would expose the perceived decadence and moral bankruptcy of the West. But instead, it fueled aspirations for freedom and a better standard of living among Romanians.
But it was the other American program, a show called Lost in Space, that really caught Roos's attention.
Identify yourself. Robot Model B9. Designed and computerized as a mechanized electronic aid for Earth voyagers engaged in astral expeditions.
It was about the adventures of the Robinson family. And the show, I believe, served a form of imaginative escape from the hardship of everyday life. The show presented a universe of possibilities and discoveries that were so far removed from the constraints of the daily lives under a repressive government.
Why shouldn't I be in love? I am no different than anyone else. Do you think I am just an insensitive collection of computer-oriented nuts and bolts? I have a central turbo mechanism that feels just like any other robots.
The show introduced me to robots as companions and protectors. And it also showed the potential of technology.
Though Roos didn't know it when she was growing up, real robots had begun to penetrate the public's consciousness. In the 1960s, Joseph Engelberger, a robotics pioneer, demonstrated the Unimate, a new industrial robot, basically a robotic arm, on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. The Unimate played golf on air, it poured a drink, it even conducted Carson's band.
Now, what he's doing now is to program what he's going to have the machine do. I mean, he's putting this information into the machine. Take it on the downbeat.
Ruse says Engelberger's demonstration bridged science fiction and reality.
I think that his decision to showcase the Unimate on national television was both visionary and strategic. It demystified robots, it showcased practical applications, it widened the public's interest, and no doubt it garnered support and established some form of leadership in the field.
It's a field that Ruse would soon fall in love with, a field she's helping to shape today. She's now the director of MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab, CSAIL, and she's a co-author of the new book, The Heart and the Chip, which looks at how robots are poised to change the world even more than they already have. She argues that robots may follow the trajectory of smartphones, expensive playthings for the wealthy at first, but then, as the technology comes down the cost curve, suddenly they're everywhere. And to be sure, that is a movie we've seen before.
For instance, the first color printer was introduced in the 1980s, and it cost about $500,000 at the time. And now if you think about the fact that we basically have throwaway color printers, it's really extraordinary. And I believe that as robotics technology advances, this high cost will become lower and lower and lower, and it will benefit from both advancements in hardware and advancements in software. Because over time, as our manufacturing processes improve and the economies of scale kick in, and then we will couple this trend with competitive pressures. And I believe that this will make robotics much more affordable and accessible to a broader audience. If you think about it, we already have robots that have gone through this cycle. Everyone who has a robotic vacuum cleaner in their home is already benefiting of this cycle. And what I would like to see is a future where, just as smartphones have become an integral part of life, robotic technology will blend seamlessly into various aspects of our lives, helping people with physical work.
Ruse has ideas for how this might look in the future, a sort of store that people could come to if they have an idea for something they'd like a robot to help with. It would be a place where specialized robots could be built very quickly.
Maybe a robot to play chess with them, or a robot to play with their cat while they're at work. And equipped with this conceptual description of the task, the customer could explore the design space using an intuitive interface. Once the general design is finalized by the customer, the store could then map that concept into physical designs and then into a physical prototype. So what could these systems do for us? Well, they could do personalized assistance. They could support us with daily tasks, maybe household chores, like folding laundry, or cleaning, or cooking.
Do you think that there's a barrier we have to surmount? Because I think about like the Roomba, the, you know, robotic vacuum cleaner. Maybe they are, but they don't feel particularly smart. They feel like very repetitive and very focused. When you talk about like a robot helping you with cooking, that's complicated. That's tricky, right?
Well, it's tricky if you have the aspiration to get an Iron Chef that would do everything in the kitchen for
you. Okay, okay.
But it's less tricky if you are okay with a robot doing some simpler tasks for you.
Okay, okay. I think it's tricky too because, you know, we start off by talking about Lost in Space. I think that a lot of people think or dream of these kind of humanoid robots, and dexterity is a really hard thing. Like when you think about the job of a waiter at a restaurant, taking orders, clearing plates, putting plates down, figuring out when you're done, when you're not done. Like, that is super complex. They're taking in all these signals all the time. It seems like dexterity would be a real challenge for a roboticist.
That's right. In fact, today, it's easier to send a robot to Mars than it is to get that robot to clear your dining table after your meal.
Right.
And this is because manipulation or thinking about autonomy in the presence of physical interactions remains challenging. We do not have the right robotic manipulators. We do not have the right mechanisms. The mechanisms do not exert the range of forces and torques that is needed to have robust manipulation systems. We do not have good perception systems for these robots. We also do not have the right body of learning, planning, and reasoning algorithms. We're making a lot of progress. And with the advent of soft robotics, we're seeing increasingly more robust and compliant systems. We're seeing systems where part of the solution comes from mechanical intelligence, part of the solution comes from perception-based reasoning. But we still have a long way to go in order to get that robust mechanism, that robust robot that can clear your dining table for you.
You're listening to Daniela Roos and Kara Miller from MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Labs Alliances podcast. This is Click Here. We'll be right back.
If you're looking for a daily guide to cybersecurity news and policy, sign up for the Cyber Daily from Recorded Future News. It serves up the day's most interesting and important cyber stories from our sister publication, The Record, and then aggregates all of the big cyber stories you might have missed from news outlets around the world. Just go to therecord.media and click on Cyber Daily to get all you need to know about the world of cybersecurity right in your inbox.
Hello, I'm Adam Fleming from the Global Story podcast from the BBC World Service. We are looking at Lina Khan, the face of the US government's battle to regulate big tech. She's already redefined the way we talk about monopolies. Now she's taking on the likes of Amazon and Meta. But who is she and will she win? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Dina. This week, we're featuring a conversation about the future of robotics between MIT researcher Daniela Roos and the host of MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Labs Alliances podcast, Kara Miller. Up next, more game-changing technologies. Take a listen.
Looking further down the road, 10 or 15 years, one of the things that Roos sees robots doing is helping aging populations, in particular as a sort of exoskeleton. She told me how she can see this helping even with her own father.
My father loves to garden, but the deer and the rabbits love to go after the bounty in the garden. And for years, he took care of gardening by himself together with my mother, and we benefited from the bounty. But recently, my father has begun to have trouble with lifting heavy things and digging holes. Now, I think my father would be very happy to have an exoskeleton. So this means a wearable robot system that would give him superpowers in strength. In other words, that would allow him to lift heavier things than his muscles are able to do and move with greater precision. And interestingly, the field of robotics is making huge advancements in building these kinds of wearable exoskeletons. In some cases, we have big exoskeletons that construction workers can use in order to move large construction pieces at the construction site.
So this is already out in the market somewhere?
So there are some products already in the market.
Okay.
We also see exoskeletons that are built for people with disabilities. Connor Walsh at Harvard has been pioneering this technology, and his exoskeletons are much more flexible, much more easily wearable in the home or in a more human-centric environment than a construction site. And in our group, we are looking into how can we begin to embed actuators and sensors in our clothes, in the clothes that we wear, so that effectively your vest or your jacket or your pants could double up as a robot to help you run faster or lift heavier things or move with greater precision.
Roos told me there are no actual products yet, but that this is not science fiction. They already have research-grade prototypes and lots of ideas. So I asked her what else she thinks is possible 10 or 15 years out.
The robots will also be super valuable in advancing various industry sectors. And so, for instance, in healthcare, we already have surgical robots that perform operations with great precision. I like to imagine a future where we could have surgical procedures without incisions, without pain, without the risk for infection, by using essentially mini robotic pills that could be ingested by the patient and then guided inside the body of the patient using an fMRI-style approach. And with this new technology, just imagine the kinds of things that we could do without pain, without incisions, without risk for infection. I'm very, very excited about healthcare applications.
Roos told me about a problem I'd never even thought of, that children swallow smaller batteries more often than you'd think because they look like candy.
So that is a real problem. I was not so sure how dangerous button batteries were.
Yeah.
And then one day, my students brought a piece of meat in the lab, a steak, and they put a button battery on the steak. And within an hour, the button battery was completely immersed in the steak. And then I realized how dangerous these button batteries are. Because when you ingest the button battery, and within an hour, that battery gets, in some sense, locked inside the tissue of the stomach, the only way to get it out is through surgical procedure. And that's what happens now. But with our idea of the mini origami surgeon, we imagine the child swallowing a pill-sized robot that could be guided with precision using a magnetic field. So you could drive this robotic pill to the location of the battery, and then using a magnet embedded in the robotic pill, you could extract the battery, and then you could guide it out of the system through the digestive system.
These mini origami surgeons could completely bypass hospitalization and the long recovery times that can risk infection. Roos told me they've already built robots like this in the lab. They've demonstrated them in stomach models. And they're working on something to be tested first on pigs because their stomachs are similar to human stomachs.
And if we were to be successful in that scenario, then we would have to do clinical trials with people.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a way to go to develop human-safe technology. But I will tell you that the mini origami surgeon, or the mini surgeon as we call it, is actually made out of food. The robot itself is made out of sausage casing.
Okay.
So when you swallow it, it's actually safe. It's not toxic to the body.
I was curious about how these advances in robotics might intersect with AI. And she told me to think of robots as something with a body and a brain.
How you design the body What that body is capable of doing essentially defines the set of tasks that the robot can do. For instance, if you create a robot with wheels, that robot will not be able to go upstairs. If you want a robot to go upstairs, you need a different design. But that robot will not do anything unless there is a brain that can guide the robot to do what it's meant to do.
Artificial intelligence is essentially that brain for robots to help it reason and move more autonomously in the world. And she said there have been huge advances in this realm in the past year alone.
But these new methods for reasoning about data are not readily deployable on robots for a number of reasons. First of all, foundational models require a lot of compute and a lot of space, and that simply does not exist, or it's not possible to configure in the body of a small robot. So imagine a drone.
Yep.
Now that drone has a small computer on it.
Right.
You cannot run large language models or diffusion models or even predictive machine learning on the kind of computers we carry on drones.
Another reason is that as smart as AI is, we don't always understand exactly how machines reach their decisions. They can hallucinate, which is to say, they can make things up.
And for a safety critical system, we actually need some guarantees that if there is a machine learning model guiding that system, the guidance will be within a safe region of operation. So we need to do something extra. We need something beyond what today's machine learning systems are capable of. And we're working on these things.
The last issue is kind of an ironic one. In a sense, AI is very smart at a high level. It's not always so smart at a practical level.
The third thing is that robots move in the physical world, and the physical world has constraints, and it's governed by common sense reasoning. If I ask you to bring me a glass of water, you know very well how to pour water in the glass, and you know that you have to carry that container in a certain way because otherwise the water would spill.
Right.
But the current AI models do not have this level of common sense reasoning. They also do not have encapsulated in them the physics of the world. And so in order to use these solutions with robots, we need to do additional computation that actually carries through it the laws of physics and the rules of behavior in the physical world.
If all of this sounds like science fiction, Ru says, we already benefit from robots in many more ways than we realize.
We have a lot of robots in our lives. So we have tens of millions of robots in factories. We also have delivery robots in hospitals. We have vacuum cleaners in homes. But we also have many other types of robots. And so, for instance, robots and especially drones are now used in conservation efforts to monitor wildlife population, to track endangered species, and even to map habitats. We also have agricultural robots that plant seeds, that help with weeding and harvesting. We also have robots used in scientific research and exploration. We have robots that are exploring the depths of the oceans. We have robots that are exploring shipwrecks and that are monitoring the coral reef life. We also have robots in the laboratory that automate tasks like analyzing samples or pipetting.
Which are all exciting possibilities. And Ru said that for the field to continue to advance, it's going to require people with a very diverse set of skills.
I guess one concern may be that the field of robotics is actually a very multidisciplinary field. You need to know computer science, but you also need to know something about materials, something about mechanical engineering, something about electrical engineering, something about mathematics. And so this interdisciplinary nature of the field is challenging. And it really requires a broader set of skills. We also see that there is a booming demand for robotic skills across many industries. And this demand is driving educational institutions and companies to invest in robotics. But this is also attracting a lot of the young graduates to companies rather than to PhD programs.
Yep.
There are a lot of initiatives aimed at bringing visibility to the field. In my mind, those of us who know how to code and who know how to make things have superpowers, because we can make real anything we imagine. And who wouldn't want to do this?
Daniela Roos is a professor of electrical engineering and computer science. She's the director of the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab, CSAIL, at MIT. She is also the author of the new book, The Heart and the Chip, with Greg Raymond. Daniela, thank you so much. This was really fun.
Thank you, Kara.
You've been listening to Daniela Roos and Kara Miller from MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Labs Alliances podcast. I'm Dina Temple-Raston, and we'll be back on Friday with an all-new Click Here Mic Drop.
Looking for more of the cybersecurity and intelligence coverage you get on Click Here? Then check out our sister publication, The Record, from Recorded Future News. You'll get breaking cyber news from reporters in New York, Washington, London, and Kyiv, among others. And you'll see for yourself why it attracts hundreds of thousands of page views every month. Just go to therecord.media.